Spider-Man, Spider-Man does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to a very mutated episode of Uncanny Treks. That's right. It's us wrapping up our coverage of Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man Season 1. We are talking about Episode 9, Hero or Menace. We are talking about Episode 10, If This Be My Destiny, a famous Spider-Man story that. And then we are reflecting a little bit on Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man Season 1. I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. Matt, how are you doing this evening?
Doing okay. Bob, the title of the episode, Hero or Menace, man, brings up J. Jonah Jameson. That is one character we have not seen in the series so far.
There does seem to be the same with Clark Kent and the Daily Planet in Superman. There does seem to be a growing trend to minimizing the journalism aspects of Superman and Spider-Man, right?
It's no longer a worthwhile career.
On the one hand, I get it. Journalists are the worst. Twitter has taught us that. Maybe we thought journalists were good people before the invention of Twitter, but since Twitter exists, we now know that journalists are terrible. But on the other hand, at least they theoretically provide a useful social function. And so that useful social function going away, we're probably going to miss it.
Possibly, Bob, but what jobs will we give them instead? What's Peter Parker going to be instead of a photographer?
PR, content creator.
Oh, yeah.
TikTok. That's what they were doing in the first episode or two, right? Is Peter Parker a TikToker?
Yeah, he's an influencer, Bob.
He's an influencer. I guess I've already forgotten the specifics, but it does remind me, I watched Spectacular Spider-Man, and they did have Daily Bugle stuff in that show, but they didn't have as much of it as you might expect. And I remember that it felt they had to do a lot of laborious explanation of why Peter Parker was involved with a newspaper in like 2008. That's the trend from it's just an unthinking part of it in Spider-Man 94. And actually, I don't know if it is in Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. I don't remember Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends well enough, but it's an unthinking part in Spider-Man 94. And obviously in the earlier comics in 2008, you really got to work for it. And then by 2025, nope, not even thinking about it.
Do they still have like journalism class at school, Bob? Newspaper?
I don't teach at quote unquote real universities. I teach at what's effectively a professional college. And then I teach at a community college. I presume journalism programs still exist, but I guess I have to admit that I don't actually know that.
Well,
sure.
I'm thinking more of a Parker's level, Bob, in high school.
Oh, yeah. Well, presumably they still do make them do some digital form of a newspaper, right?
Yeah, it's probably a blog or something, or even a podcast, Bob.
A high school podcast.
There you go.
To just dive right into episode 9, Hero or Menace, I'd complained about Tony Stark showing up in the show, and I still would rather not see Tony Stark in my Spider-Man. But I do have to admit that Osborn using Tony Stark to gloat to Otto, that's somewhat makes the Tony Stark cameo okay for me.
You had to have Tony there, and you had to have that connection, I think, to the greater Marvel thing, Bob. You have to have that connection at this point with Disney. I know you
even though
it.
It's a parallel universe and it doesn't exist in the same one.
Yeah,
you still have to have the connection.
I know you hate it, but you have to have that connection, Bob. There's got to be that little inkling that it's connected somehow, a little thread.
Obviously, this is not news at all. They've been doing this the whole show, but the use of panels for the animation, especially during the car chase and the 110th Street gang fighting the Scorpions, using the panels to both show you more and to mimic the style of the comics. Man, that was really cool stuff. Also, they used it when Peter and Norman were chatting on the phone.
This is the thing that I feel it's missing to some degree from the Superman cartoon that we also cover. There's nothing that takes you back to the comic book feel. You don't ever get a comic book feeling watching them, but you get more of an anime.
Maybe not to defend that Superman cartoon, the current Superman cartoon, the Adventures of Superman cartoon. I hate that cartoon, but I don't know that doing a very kind of stylized sort of comic technique, I don't think that would change my opinion of it. Like you say, they're going for an audience raised on anime. And apparently, I was listening to another podcast where they brought this up. Apparently, there's a lot of specifically Dragon Ball Z tropes.
Yeah.
In that show, apparently the way they introduced Supergirl and also presumably they were speculating the way they are going to introduce Connor Kent, Superboy, in season 3. It's just all very Dragon Ball Z.
Well, what if it is just a way to turn Superman into a Dragon Ball Z thing where you have this long... Is Dragon Ball Z went on forever? It went on for years.
I think it still goes on in some sense, at least in the comics. I'm not sure about the animation.
Wouldn't it be crazy if this Superman show took off when it became like this long-running Dragon Ball Z? That'd be awful, I'll bet.
I tried to watch a Dragon Ball Z episode when I was in fourth grade or seventh grade or whatever, and it just slid right off me. That was the age where I could still make myself get into something if I wanted to, and I just didn't want to. And some of that was probably xenophobia, and some of that was contempt for people my brother's age, and I didn't want to get into what they were into. The point I was going to make, though, is I don't know this because I don't really understand Dragon Ball Z at all, but from what I vaguely understand, there is a lot of Superman in Goku. The character of Goku is apparently fairly inspired by Superman. So I guess in that sense, it's apparently a fairly natural lift.
I apologize for going off on this Superman tangent, guys. It's just comparing these two shows to me is interesting because of just the styles themselves. I really am liking the Spider-Man cartoon, but I enjoy the Superman cartoon a little more than Bob does.
I absolutely hate the Superman cartoon. And it's interesting because I've texted you about this, and I think we talked about this on air before, but it is wild that as millennials who are 40, almost 40, we're really living in peak nostalgia. We have an X-Men cartoon, a Superman cartoon, a Spider-Man cartoon, and a Batman cartoon, all active shows at the same time. And that hasn't been the case since the 90s, although I'm a little bit stacking the deck in saying that because there hasn't been a Superman cartoon. There have been other X-Men, Spider-Man, Batman cartoons. So maybe if you were just going off those three more popular characters than Superman, maybe there would be other moments of convergence. It just is interesting because on the one hand, it's obviously, it seems to me, peak nostalgia. On the other hand, it's just these are the major characters of these major companies and they're servicing them by animation. But I don't know, how nostalgia driven do you feel these four shows are? Because it does feel the X-Men and the Batman cartoons are heavily nostalgia driven, I guess, if I were to generalize, whereas this Spider-Man and the Superman cartoon don't feel heavily nostalgia driven. Is that fair?
I agree, but I would say Caped Crusader, while it's still following the whole Bruce Timm, his whole look, you're right on that. I would say the most nostalgia-driven probably is the X-Men, of course, just because it's
a literal continuation. Whereas in Caped Crusader, there's two levels of nostalgia. There's let's do Batman, the animated series, but gritty and real. The still like general 1940s nostalgia, 1950s nostalgia that a lot of Batman products have.
Right. And Superman's your anime, your DBZ nostalgia.
If it's nostalgia-driven, it's only 10-year nostalgia-driven or 20-year nostalgia-driven as opposed to 40-year nostalgia-driven. We would agree that this cartoon is not especially nostalgia-driven because in some ways it does feel like it is. In some ways it's just playing different beats of the same song of Spider-Man from the 90s, but maybe in other ways it's taking more influence from Spider-Verse. It's trying to have a fairly contemporary animation style and soundtrack.
If anything, it's just trying to take nostalgia from the MCU itself.
So this raises another interesting question. My guy Noah texted me and he said, it turns out, according to him and what he's reading, it sounds like I'm wrong to refuse to see Captain America 4 because I haven't seen Falcon and Winter Soldier. And granted, he's not going to see Captain America 4 either, but he says I should refuse to see Captain America 4 because I haven't seen the 2008 or whenever Hulk movie.
Oh, yeah.
And apparently it's super reliant on that Hulk movie, which I think we're both utterly mystified by that. Why are they making that decision?
They want to try to tie everything back together, and that's what they did. And I mean, a lot of people are wondering if this film was actually a sequel to the Hulk movie.
You might be right with that. That sounds right. My other theory I came up with was, so did that first Hulk, the first MCU Hulk movie, did that come out in 2008? Is that about right?
Yeah, it was a long time ago, yes.
If you imagine a kid born in 2000, was 8 years old and saw that movie, although I think it was PG-13, but whatever, right. Was 8 years old, saw that movie, and now they're 25. Are they literally trying to play into people's now childhood nostalgia for the MCU?
That's what they're going for. That's the nostalgia piece right there. I know you think nostalgia, you think all the way back to like the 90s, but honestly, people in like the early 2000s. I also think that anyone who probably didn't go and see all the Infinity Wars, all the people who went to, if you didn't go see all that kind of stuff or weren't as into that and then went to see Captain America, I think you could probably make some kind of like connection. They're trying to get back people who didn't even jump on to begin with.
Wow. I mean, and in that way, it's hilarious that you're running into the same problem that the comics have always had, is that superhero stories, for as much as I love them and much as you love them, they have to create the illusion of change without any actual change, right?
Right.
And so now we have a whole multi-billion-dollar movie franchise that has the same problem.
I alluded to this last week when I was talking about how they set up this film as just Captain America versus Red Hulk, as that's what they were going for. They know that people are getting a little tired of just all the confusion that comes with the multiverse.
The continuity, the baggage,
all that stuff. So many TV shows and all that. That's what they went for. When in reality, Red Hulk only shows up at the end of the film for something like 10 minutes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's been a big issue.
Because he's all over the trailers.
That was the big complaint, is that they saw that they were going to have Harrison Ford as Red Hulk, and instead of making that more of a surprise thing. All right, do you remember when we were in high school and the second episode 2 came out, and the big reveal was that Yoda actually fights the lightsaber? The assholes who got to see the film at midnight the day it dropped, they came back to school the next day telling us all about it. We didn't have internet back then. Well, it's the same way with this. They could have just held out on the Hulk, but nobody would have gone to see the film. Your main villain is like the leader. He goes all the way back to the 2008 Hulk film too. Now he's got like a messed up head or something.
You may not be in a position to know this, and that's fine. But I wonder, okay, the Red Hulk's only in it for 10 minutes. I wonder how much Harrison Ford is actually in it.
I mean, he's the president, so I think he's in it a lot. It's a political drama, apparently. But keep in mind, I'm getting all this based on my viewing of YouTube's honest trailers.
Also, something I'm torn about. I'm torn about what the MCU is trying to do. I'm torn about whether or not Spider-Man is driven by nostalgia. And I'm a little torn that on the one hand, Matt, my guy, Big Donovan, he's a coward. But on the other hand, maybe he just has good judgment.
I mean, he does, Bob. If you were up against a dude with a scorpion outfit on, just chopping away at your fringe, what would you do?
Maybe it's time to say discretion is the better part of valor and GTFO. In one hand, as someone who has been watching media for 40 years, I should not be surprised by having a climactic transformation towards the end of the season. But on the other hand, I guess I have to say I was almost surprised that they actually transformed Tombstone or began the transformation of Tombstone into Tombstone in this episode. I almost thought, maybe they'll just wait till season 2.
Were you surprised they didn't go the full conversion? Did you think he was going to step out of the back of the truck, full gray and weird haircut?
I'm both surprised that they went ahead with the conversion, and I'm a little surprised that they're slow rolling it. I was going to bring this up at the end of episode 10, right? We see him when he kind of makes his villain decision. We see him having the little specks of gray. Well, my final comment on that, having the experience of watching these two episodes at a time, perfect. That's what they should do.
And honestly, the two episodes run together, but they run together so well.
And they're also pretty distinct episodes, to give them credit. Right. I mean, they do run together inevitably because we watch them together and talk about them together, but they're fairly distinct, at least. The other point about Tombstone I did want to make, I don't know how much you followed discourse about the Zeb Wells Spider-Man run that just ended not too long ago, and I only followed discourse about it intermittently, but it does seem people mostly hated that run, although some people really defended it, and I think I'm more sympathetic to the people who defended it, but I haven't read it yet, so I don't know. But I know that one of the angles of that Zeb Wells run was pushing Tombstone to be one of the biggest bads ever for Spider-Man. And so I was a little surprised by the whole arc of the season and by even in this episode 9 that Tombstone is still pretty non-villainous. It literally ends with a team up between Tombstone and Spider-Man.
He'll be a big bad though, Bob. It'll be a long-running thing.
We'll talk about that, I guess, in next episode. And then this is perhaps a shallow observation, but I'll just go ahead and make it. Because of Scarlet Witch saying no more mutants, anytime a Marvel character says no more something, that's always going to feel maybe more portentous than it should. So when, I can't remember actually who says it, but when Peter and Nico agree no more secrets, and especially given that we know Nico is going in a magical direction, one wonders how significant that's going to be in the future.
Yeah, did her charm light up when they said it?
I don't think it did, but they did do things with her charm lighting up later.
Anytime something magical happens, we get to see her charm light up. It happened in the car scene the previous episode.
When she was racing a Beetlejuice woman?
Yes, correct.
Okay, interesting. I didn't notice that charm lighting up at all. That's cool. Although, it has been a very prominent part of her character design, obviously. Well, Matt, who is your character of the episode for episode 9, Hero or Menace?
I mean, I got to give it to Tombstone, Bob. He's a hero in this episode, but he'll probably wind up being a menace.
Heroic Tombstone. I give it to him too. For episode 10, If This Be My Destiny, I guess to begin with, Matt, were you a little surprised that Doctor Strange and Daredevil were in the recap leading into the episode?
I wasn't, because I knew this was going to be the finale, and they always go full circle with these things. So we had to go back to the first episode, which we did. And then we created this chicken egg scenario.
In hindsight, it makes more sense that Doctor Strange would come up. I was maybe a little surprised that Daredevil would come up. For instance, they have Tony Stark in this season too, but they don't feel the need, and Thunderbolt Ross, but they don't feel the need to put them in. But on the other hand, obviously Daredevil had a lot of unfinished business from his fight with Spider-Man, so it makes sense that they would return to Daredevil.
Anytime they can show any mass superhero, they're gonna throw him up there, bub. That's how they get ratings. Yeah.
So that's what put butts in the seats. Yeah. Now, Matt, so I should have brought this up before, and I didn't. And it's not necessarily as strong in this episode as it is strong in earlier episodes. But what are you thinking that we have a romantic triangle here between Pearl, Peter, and Nico?
I can't really tell anymore, Bob.
Between Nico and Peter both being very into Pearl.
Right.
It seems to be the axes of the triangle. And in its way, that's classic Spider-Man. That's Spider-Man, Gwen, Mary Jane, Flash, Harry, love shapes. It's fine there. It is interesting that it is still this thing, I guess, with same-sex couples where generally in the culture, we're at a place where you can pretty strongly suggest it between Pearl and Nico, but they're still maybe not doing it as directly as they are between Pearl and Peter. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, Bob. We're not quite there yet. We're getting there.
It's a lot more than subtext, but it's also maybe not fully explored or fully put out there. This is going to be me being a stupid pedant. Amadeus Omega Cum Laude joke. Do you know why that's a stupid joke?
Why, Bob?
Cum Laude is Latin and Omega is Greek. Oh. So that's why it's a stupid joke. And I'm not sure if the writers know that that's a terrible joke. Is the point that Amadeus Cho is not as smart as he thinks he is?
I think so, Bob.
Okay, yeah, because I think there's also some possibility that they think it's a fine joke conceptually, just a little cheesy, and that's what they're going for. But if that's the case, that makes me angry, because it's no, he's crossing his dead languages.
Well, Bob, I know we've discussed this a little bit before, but Amadeus Cho, he's Incredible Hulk and like, right? He becomes a Hulk and something.
I was prepared to correct you on that, but I went back and looked. You're absolutely 100% dead on. He becomes the totally awesome Hulk in December 2015.
So 10 years ago. Yeah, okay. It's just weird to me.
That was around the same era that Falcon was Captain America right. in the comics, although he's remained Captain America. And the same era where Jane Foster is Thor, although Amadeus Cho may have slightly predated those. I'm not actually sure who came first, but that was a period where, you know, three of your biggest Marvel characters were all quote unquote replacements or new incarnations, right? So I remember that being very controversial among racist alt-right people who didn't realize that obviously the comics would reset.
You mean they always go back to the source material?
It's almost like time? They had never read a comic before.
Every single time.
Maybe we were dumb kids, but I think you can more forgive us in 1992 for being, oh man, Superman's never coming back. Batman's never going to walk again. But it's been decades.
It's just like wrestling, Bob. It goes through cycles of being good and being, you know, just same with comics. Some of your creative teams suck, some aren't, but it always has to reset back to the status quo.
Well, to go back to the cartoon, I really did enjoy how Doctor Strange appears to put the kibosh on science. He literally says, I speak for sorcery or something to that effect. And then I really enjoyed how Norman goes into Donald Trump or Elon Musk mode and pretty quickly throws Dr. Fauci, a.k.a. Doctor Strange, off base, right? That Norman's like, see, it's perfectly safe. No unimaginable horrors. That whole dynamic just really made me laugh.
As the evil symbiote comes flying out of it.
Well, Matt, were you surprised that it was coming back to interdimensional symbiotes here in the climax? Given how much the season was focused on Norman, and how much the end of episode 9 was about like Norman trying to create replacements, presumably clones of Spider-Man, I was surprised that we also went in this direction with symbiotes.
They want to keep every door open, Bob. That's what they're going for.
Will season 2 be clones and season 3 symbiotes or vice versa?
I'm thinking we'll do clones next season, probably have symbiotes be the big finale. We'll go back to the symbiotes at the end again in the next finale, and season 3 will be all about symbiotes.
I don't know anything about how long Marvel gives its cartoons these days, or if there's patterns to that, or if they just follow the usual streaming TV patterns. But would you expect, because I think we know for sure this show has 3 seasons, would you expect it to get any more than that? Or do you think that's about what you should expect for a streaming Marvel cartoon in this day and age?
Well, Bob, they used to measure the cartoon's success on toy sales, so I hadn't seen any toys yet.
Yeah, but do they still do that? That condemned Legion of Superheroes and the Young Justice the first time around.
Right.
But the resurrection of Young Justice season 3 and then the resurrection of season 4 would seem to suggest that there's a lot more at play now than toys, right?
So what are they using to measure the success of these things other than just streaming numbers?
Which are, you know, are apparently fake. And
we're back here watching Young Justice, you know, 10, 15 years after it's come out, acting like it's still getting streaming counts.
They take stuff off of Max if it's not doing the numbers. Babylon 5, gone. Raised by Wolves, gone. Westworld, gone.
Right.
Although, granted, their agreements with DC may be slightly more advantageous because they own it.
Well, Bob, let me ask you this, though. With the Sony films and them coming in with the symbiote stuff, at the end of all the Sony films, they kept trying to push that the symbiote was coming through the MCU, and then here you have it coming into the cartoon or whatever of this universe. Is this just them trying to, like, make up for the missed opportunities they had with the films?
I can't remember exactly what I said about this, but when I was talking Venom 3 to you, I think I was really stressing how wild that it really felt the end of Venom 2 was going one way, and then the start of Venom 3 was, nope, we're not going that
right
way. In fact, let's reel it back in. It is interesting that they are maybe going to explore a crossover, although, granted, these symbiotes seem fairly different than the symbiotes as we know them, either in the comics or in the MCU.
That'll be interesting, and I really hope they give it time to flesh that out and don't just try to shove it down our throats the first couple of episodes of season 2.
Here's another question. On the one hand, I can imagine if listeners do know what the conventions of current Marvel streaming cartoons are, I can imagine them being frustrated with me. But I don't know what those conventions are, so I don't feel like I can judge the Spider-Man cartoon by those conventions. But I also wonder if, given this is strong ties to the MCU, which make it a lot more similar to What If and a lot more dissimilar to the Guardians of the Galaxy cartoon or the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon, I wonder if those rules even apply to this show. If this show, because it's so tied into the MCU, even though it's a parallel universe, might be successful enough that it could, you know, go for 4, 5, 6 seasons. I wonder about that. And then I also wonder, I guess I have to admit, I haven't followed online discourse about the show at all. I get the sense that people maybe don't like the show, but I'm not totally sure. What do you have any sense of what the reaction to the show has been?
Everything I've read has been mostly positive, except for some of the changes they've made, which we'll talk about a little further down as we keep covering this episode.
Okay. I was looking on Serialized, which is a very small site and should not be necessarily taken as a bellwether of anything. And there's not that many users on it, but of the dozens of users on Serialized, I was seeing a lot negative or mutedly positive, I would say. So that made me wonder, if is this like Star Trek Discovery, where there's a whole fan industry of hate about it?
I haven't felt that yet. Nowhere near it. Bob, it's got a 97% on Rotten Tomatoes, 70%.
Okay. That's pretty good. I don't really know, but that sounds pretty good.
People are liking it for the most part.
Well, Matt, one other question, since we're posing questions. Does it bother you that on this show there's no difference at all between Peter Parker's voice and Spider-Man's voice?
Absolutely not. That's always been a Batman thing for me, Bob. And that was Kevin Conroy and the way he did Batman the Animated Series. I don't even like it when
Keaton did that too. And I mean, granted, it's a different medium.
Right.
Keaton does that in 89 and 92. Yeah.
He did. Yeah. But the thing is, I even get annoyed when Green Arrow did it in the Green Arrow CW series. Dude, stop. That's the Batman thing.
Well, on the one hand, I definitely see what you're saying. And definitely there's a lot of bad examples of it. I hate Christian Bale's Batman voice. I hate it. And I can imagine the Arrow being so influenced by the Nolan verse was a pretty bad version of that. But, and this is maybe me being too persnickety about this. And as we've discussed, this show is very free with people knowing Peter is Spider-Man, so it doesn't matter as much. But it doesn't matter to me more on like a artistic level, oh, I want different Peter and Spider-Man voices. It more matters to me on the level of, how could anyone be in the same room as Spider-Man and Peter Parker and not know they're the same?
But that's why it doesn't matter, because there's so many people in the world, Bob, that Spider-Man's out there saving people he probably won't see again.
I get that. But I'm just saying, if Norman didn't already know, how could he not know?
Right. I think that's, they're trying to move away from the secret identity piece, I think, is a big thing with the recent hero stuff. just because it's just hard to do in today's society.
It stayed away for Iron Man, right? They, when they got rid of it for Iron Man, it never made sense, really, for there to be a secret identity there.
Right.
But I don't know where the current state of it is in the Marvel Universe. I think Peter Parker still has a secret identity, but do people know Bruce Banner's the Hulk? I don't know like what the state of play with like Matt Murdock and Daredevil is. I know there was a whole thing about it for a while, but right. I got the feeling maybe they put the genie back in the bottle and I haven't kept up with Daredevil comics for the last 5 years or so.
Yeah, it's possible. I think the secret identity thing's been played out so much. They never really did anything with it in the Superman and the Henry Cavill movies. That was a thing. I know I keep going back to Superman, but it's just easy to compare.
With Superman, that's an inner... Because, you know, Brian Bendis is the one who famously outed Daredevil in what was a very effective story. And then apparently this also just has something to do with... Brian Bendis also, I think he subscribes to... Is that philosophy called radical honesty? I hope I'm not putting word in Bendis's mouth, but... And I don't know if, I think his telling the Matt Murdock outing himself, that was more inspired by just storytelling conventions. But when Bendis came to Superman, he outed Superman's secret identity. And I think that was less motivated by, oh, what's good for the character, and more just motivated by Bendis subscribes to this philosophy of radical honesty. And that seemed to be, I'm not necessarily saying it was a good idea or was a bad idea. I think it could have been handled well, but I think in practice, the Bendis run on Superman was a little disappointing, and no other writers really seemed interested in it. And so they've already put the genie back in the bottle with Superman's secret identity. I guess I would differ from you. I think a secret identity is probably a good story trope in general. Modern surveillance technology is panopticon-ish and disturbing, but I think I give it less effectiveness than you do.
Yeah.
So I'm more okay with it as a convention, but I do tend to agree that the secret identity thing gets a little problematic with Peter or whomever just constantly lying to Aunt May, constantly lying to his friends, constantly lying to his girlfriends. Contemporary social norms maybe see that as a little more wrong and psychologically damaging than we did in, say, the mid-20th century. Well, Matt, were you really surprised not just that they brought Strange back, but they introduced this whole time travel element?
The bootstrap paradox, Bob. It's a bit crazy. It's just the chicken and the egg thing. What came first? Did Spider-Man come first? Did the spider come first? Did the Spider-Man come first? Which one?
You think I have a lot of trouble with the chicken or the egg quality or the paradox quality of this? I don't really have any thoughts or even care about that. I guess where I'm coming at with it, it just seems unnecessary to me. I'm just surprised at making the decision to present this as a story. It just doesn't seem to add anything. Maybe it will in future seasons. That's more my take on it. My brain doesn't hurt of did Spider-Man create Spider-Man or did something else create Spider-Man. My brain just hurts of a little bit of, huh, why would the writers do that?
Because, Bob, they want to do some time travel in season 4.
Yeah, well, that is usually the trajectory. If you go off the model of Spider-Man 94, this is what they're working towards. On a long enough time horizon, all Spider-Man cartoons bend to Madame Web, I guess is what I'm saying.
That's correct. And Madame Web failed in live action, so you know what? We'll stick her in cartoon form.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're already redeeming the symbiotes, Matt. We can redeem Madame Web, too. Even though, actually, I would say there's no redeeming Madame Web. It's just a terrible concept that should not exist. We've already talked about this quite a lot, Matt. But in general, do you more want to see them do a hopefully better version of the Clone Saga? Or do you more want to see them do a version of the Alien Suit Saga?
I'm more interested in their take on the symbiotes just because I have such fond memories of the 94 episodes, which I don't think probably... If I went back and watched them now, would live up to what I remember them.
Is that why you don't want to watch Spider-Man?
I also have absolutely no fond memories of Clone Saga, the actual comics. So I'm not ready to embark on that journey.
I guess I have the flip response to you of the Alien Suit Saga has been done pretty well in a couple different mediums. And it's just been done a lot. I'm not necessarily criticizing the other ones. I'm just saying it's a story you almost always do. Whereas the Clone Saga, widely considered a failure. So it seems to me more potential for reimagining the Clone Saga than reimagining the Alien Suit Saga. Does that make sense?
Did we see, how much of the Clone Saga did we see in the 94 show? Not much, right?
I don't think that much, although I think we did see a little, although embarrassingly, I'm already a little hazy on the details.
It's but like probably nothing crazy. We saw a ton of stuff with the alien suit.
Well, and Spectacular Spider-Man, which I keep bringing up, they did the Alien Suit Saga, and I like Spectacular Spider-Man a lot, but I disliked how they did the Alien Suit Saga. Another little small bit of this episode I enjoyed, Matt, is just Harry doom-scrolling memes about him and his father. Just felt very relatable, very 2025.
Wouldn't you do the same thing if you were famous, Bob?
I probably would. I also, Matt, this is, I think on the whole, really like this show. I ranked it pretty high in my all-time cartoon list. I might knock it down a couple spots because of some of the things that happen in this last episode and some of the things they tease. I'm a little worried about the future. I'm not like, oh, this show sucks, but I'm just a little anxious about some of the directions it's going. But the thing I hate the most that they do is Harry and Peter are going to start their own company of teen geniuses. I hate this. I hate this because I'm anti-capitalist. I hate it because I hate entrepreneurial and grind culture. And I hate it because it's become a real, real overused cliche. I haven't read these comics, but I know this has been done in recent Spider-Man comics. I've read the recent Wasp comics where it's been done. I've read the recent Fantastic Four comics where it's been done. I think it sucks. I really hate turning superheroes into startups. God, it sucks.
This is done in the video games too, and it's really annoying, but it gives some good side quests.
The Sony Spider-Man games? Ooh, that's depressing.
Exact same idea.
In fairness, there always has been a corporate angle to Spider-Man, or maybe not always, but they're pretty prominently, they're Oscorp and Otto, and then where directions it goes with Dan Slott's run with Horizon Labs, and direction Spider-Man 2099 goes with Alchemax. So it's not a totally alien fit by any means.
I mean, but it's called Web, Bob. Web.
I always like the title Web of Spider-Man. So I'm torn on the, because they did this in the comic too, right? I think Web of Spider-Man Volume 3 is Spider-Man's company, Web.
Yeah.
And so on the one hand, I like that they resurrect the title, but on the other hand, man, that's a cheesy acronym. Yeah. Thinking of just hating startup culture, Silicon Valley culture, I don't know if this is a real term. I suspect it probably is, but I believe it's Nico describes Peter's coworkers at Oscorp as his friend turns, and that made me want to die.
Yeah, I'm going to try to use that term at some point in my life. Friend turn.
God.
That's awful.
Well, Matt, you can't have friend turns. You're a man in your 40s.
Missed opportunity, Bob. Could have used the word friend turn.
You and I both dodged bullets that we never really did, quote, internships. Yeah. I mean, you did student teaching, but that's not really an internship.
Correct.
It wouldn't be a new Marvel Disney cartoon if they didn't have a chalkboard teasing future plot developments. We see Harry's chalkboard. We get a lot of names. I only knew two of the names. Were those the same two names you knew?
Yep. Only names I knew. Max Dillon, who of course is Electro. Are we going to get the Jamie Foxx Electro, Bob? That's the question.
Ooh. I don't remember that movie very well. Was Jamie Foxx a scientist in that? Usually in the comics, not that they have to stick to this, but I think in the comics, Electro, if I remember right, is just an electricity lineman. And then I think he's just very blue collar criminal after that.
No, this one was very different.
Okay. He was a tragic scientist.
Yeah. And the electricity fixed his teeth, Bob.
Oh, that's nice. Who's the other name you recognize?
Ned Leeds. Ned's a prominent figure in the MCU stuff. He's basically Harry.
And so Ned is Spider-Man's fat friend. I don't like that character, and I don't like that as a version of Ned Leeds. The Ned Leeds I like is a reporter. He's slightly older than Peter. He's the one who successfully romances Betty. And so he and Peter are friends, but there's also a little bit of tension there because Betty's still close to Peter. That's the Ned I like. I don't care for Ned as Peter's overweight best friend and computer hacker. I think that's lame.
Yeah, he's really cool, Bob.
No, it's not cool. It's lame.
He dropped his big Death Star Lego.
To be clear, it's totally fine to make Ned Asian. That makes perfect sense. They do it in Spectacular Spider-Man, and they keep him as a reporter, and that's great. That's the way you should do it. I just don't like him as like a fat hacker. These are the other names on the board who appear to be other Marvel characters. I'd never heard of any of these people. So there's Scott Forbes. He's apparently an FBI agent who's the Inhumans contact. There's Ty Miranda and Priya Agarwal. They apparently both work for Hank Pym. There's Tiberius Stone.
Cyborg's dead.
No, that's Silas Stone. Tiberius Stone is the other one we probably should know. I'm not sure if he's just in Spider-Man 2020, but he's the founder of Alchemax, the evil company in Spider-Man 2099.
Yeah.
Kid Nixon is a time-traveling mutant from an early 2000s comic called NYX. I don't know if you remember that comic. I mean, I never read it. I don't think you did, but I don't know if you remember it existed.
No, I don't know.
It actually is a part of the current X-Men relaunch, which sucks. Just overall, it sucks. But NYX is one of the books in that relaunch. Although I haven't read NYX. Maybe it's amazing. Maybe I'm totally off base. Maybe it would change my mind about the whole X-Men relaunch if I read it.
Oh, wait. This is the one I thought might be X-Men Sex and the City or something.
I was saying no because it's based off like teen comics from the early 2000s. That was very grungy. X-23 Laura Kinney was very prominent in both the early 2000s NYX and the current NYX. The character named Ripley Ryan on the board, and she's apparently Captain Marvel's new kid sidekick. I think she debuted a couple years ago. There's a character named Diane Jenkins, who's apparently a one-off 2019 character who got mistaken for Spider-Woman and killed in the comics. There's four other names that I don't think are Marvel characters as far as I could tell. Leanne Dufour, Ben Anders, Tony Sandoval, and Adam Rooney. Maybe they're just producers or, you know, interns or something on the show.
Somebody's best friend.
Any other thoughts about the candidates for Web, Matt?
I mean, not really. No, I mean, I don't know if we'll see any of these characters.
Ned and Max, the others seem like reaches. I'm not just saying that because they're the only ones we know. Well, Matt, were you surprised that Finesse was Daredevil's sidekick? Were you surprised by that reveal?
Not really, Bob. Didn't I tell you we were going to have a group of young superheroes just ready for the plucking at the beginning of the show, and you scoffed at me?
No. I scoffed at the idea that they were going to become the Slingers, Matt.
Yeah.
You didn't predict that, oh, Jeannie Foucault is going to turn into Taskmaster's daughter. If you had predicted that, I'd been like, I don't know if that's the direction of the show's going in, but I could see it. But no, you said that they would get on those suits and they would become the Slingers, which did not happen.
50% of them wear masks now, Bob.
There's five total, including Spider-Man.
There's four total, and then the Wizard. Wizard's going to be the bad guy, Bob, so I'm not even counting him.
He ain't got a mask yet.
He's not a kid.
Where's his mask? So another slight criticism of the show I had, again, I like this show. This last episode is making me sound more negative than I am. But did Tombstone's heel turn here at the end of the episode kind of feel unmotivated to you?
I mean, yeah, they got to make him a little bad, Bob, somehow. They were building him up too much.
But there's no reason for him to go evil.
Maybe it's the chemicals.
Maybe it's the chemicals, or maybe it's the pull of the gang. Once you're in the gang, it just makes you evil. But I don't know, for spending such time with Lonnie's transition into Tombstone, it just feels weird that there's not a more decisive reason for him to actually commit to being a gangster. Does that make sense?
Yeah, Bob, it's not like the whole message was with great power comes great respect.
Apparently, I'm a moron, but I thought that was supposed to be Ben Parker visiting in the jail.
No.
Where does it say it's Richard?
It's Richard. That's because we know Ben Parker's dead, Bob. Uncle Ben's
she
dead.
Could be lying to him.
Uncle, she's lying to him, and he's in prison. And she goes and visits him. He's Spider-Man. You don't think you figure that out?
No, Spider-Man is not an intelligent hero. I mean, he's good with science, but he's not a detective.
You can Google your Uncle Ben, Bob, and there's no obituary, but there's a prison thing.
You're telling me there's nothing in this scene to tell you it's Richard Parker?
Right now it's Richard Parker because they tried this exact scene in the Andrew Garfield movies. The exact same scene, Bob, in the Andrew Garfield movies, and it sucked ass.
I'm not actually that confident in this, but just for the sake of the drama, I'm willing to bet you $50 it's not Richard that it's Ben.
I'll take that bet, Bob. It's Richard Parker. Right. It's Peter's dad, and they're just keeping it secret that he's in prison.
And just for clarity, his name tag on his prison jumpsuit doesn't say Dick or anything?
No.
Now, granted, either way, I don't think this is necessarily a good plot direction, right?
Right.
If it's Richard, that's bad. If it's Ben, that's bad. But if it is Ben, that also raises the possibility that Ben and May actually might be Peter's biological parents, which is also not great territory.
I'm telling you, well, from the get-go, though, I did not want them to go back and retread this territory because it was awful in the Garfield films and nobody wanted to see it. It was so bad, I think they even cut the scenes out of the film, which from that movie is ridiculous.
It's just the temptation that writers always have to go back to, and there's no reason to go back to it.
Well, Bob, my character of the episode for this final episode is going to go to Finesse. Because I thought Finesse was a random character to just show up, and I really didn't think she was going to make an appearance even.
Yeah. No, this the use of finesse was very cool. I don't mind Daredevil having a teen sidekick. I like that. I like that all quite a bit. I'm going to give it to Doctor Strange for this episode. I really liked how off base and confused he felt by Norman Osborn. Very identifiable. Matt, to do a little bit of season overview, do you want to run down who your characters of the episode were for each week?
Sure, Bob. So I chose Nico twice, which I think she's a great character in the series. Glad to see her. I chose Butane.
Do you still remember who Butane is?
Yeah, it was the baddie of the week, I think in the second or third episode.
The fire guy. Yeah. I guarantee if they'd done this once a week, you wouldn't remember who he was by the end.
Probably not. Then I had Norman Osborn, Scorpion, Harry Osborn, Daredevil, Otto Octavius, Tombstone, and then Finesse.
Nice, nice. And then I gave it to Harry. I gave it to Finesse before she was Finesse. I gave it to Tarantula. I gave it to Peter. I really like how he keeps blowing his secret identity. I gave it to Not Yet Rhino. Like you, I also gave it to Daredevil. I gave it to Norman because I admire his pettiness to Otto. I gave it to Chameleon, although we didn't see very much of Chameleon. I also gave it to Tombstone, and then I gave it to Doctor Strange.
When it comes to this season, Bob, the only thing I wish they would have done a little differently, it'd be my least favorite thing about it, is just the teen drama to the superhero action ratio. And we talked about this in our last episode coverage, but that to me was one thing I dislike. There's just too much teen drama, not enough superhero action.
I want to a little bit call you a hypocrite then, because your favorite character is Nico, right? You picked her twice.
You're because she's so obscure, Bob. She's so obscure.
But I'm just saying she's very, very central to this teen drama. And yet you say that the teen drama is the worst part of the show. Curious.
Interesting, Bob. Interesting. Maybe I don't like Harry Osborn's drama. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe I'm anti-Harry.
I do like Harry, but interestingly, Nico never makes it into my favorite characters, even though I do like this version of Nico a lot, too. I do think the amount of teen drama to superhero action is interesting, and I do think I at least appreciate that the teen drama, like I said last week, it moves quickly. The status quo on it is changing. It's not just repetitive soap opera stuff, so I at least appreciate that. I already said what my least favorite thing is. It's this entrepreneurial turn they take in the last episode. I really am not excited about the adventures of Webb.
Well, Bob, the thing that surprised me the most about this show that I was just, wow, is that they actually went with a traditional suit by the end. Watching the previews for this, I really thought they were going to go with something different or just continue this different suit trend. Honestly, that would probably sell more action figures.
From the previews for the season and the early season, yes. By the time that the Future Foundation suit got shredded at the end of episode 8, I knew he was going to show up in his quote-unquote real clothes. I'm really surprised that they're going to either Ben or Richard Parker, although I still think it's Ben.
Well, Bob, what was your favorite thing about the season? Mine was, like I said, seeing a character that I did not think would appear in an animated form, Nico. That was awesome. Good for Nico.
Matt's all the time he spent on, what was that magic RPG game called?
Midnight Suns, Bob.
All that time on Midnight Suns, all of a sudden validated.
Yes.
For me, even though Matt doesn't like the teen drama, I actually like this version of the supporting cast with Lonnie, Nico, Pearl, Harry. I thought this was a very good version of the supporting cast. I definitely miss Gwen and Mary Jane and even Liz and Sally. And I miss Jonah and Robbie and the whole Bugle crew too. But this is even though I'd maybe like to see some of the more classic supporting cast being incorporated in future seasons, I do like a different high school class for Peter. That's interesting.
Bob over here rattling off the cast like it's Happy Days or something.
Honestly, it's maybe better than Happy Days. Spider-Man soap opera has gone longer than Happy Days ever did.
That's true.
Spider-Man soap opera, well, I mean, the comic itself jumped the shark with One More Day, but the supporting cast never really did. Yes. Happy Days jumped the shark. What was the crappy Happy Days spinoff?
Joni meets Chachi, but you know, Happy Days literally was the origin of jumping the shark when Vaughn's
why I made the reference. Yeah. Spider-Man never spawned Joni meets Chachi, so you know, back up off Spider-Man, Matt.
We're not going to talk about what Spider-Man has spawned, Bob. Trust me, we could go into detail about some of the things that spawned from Spider-Man,
including Spawn himself. All right, Matt. Well, this has been fun to watch this show, which I mostly enjoyed and I thought I would hate, so I'm glad we watched it together. I think we're Spider-Man'd out. So I think it sounds like, dear listeners, you should maybe expect us in a week covering the Batman comic stories Hush and Broken City, which is to say Matt's favorite Batman story and my favorite Batman story.
It's not really my favorite Batman story. We are getting hyped, though, for Hush 2.
We're getting hyped for Hush 2. Maybe let's put it a different way. We're going to cover Bob's least favorite Batman story and Matt's least favorite Batman story.
There we go. That's better.
All right. Well, this has been Uncanny Treks. Join us for our Hush and Broken City coverage. I'm Bob in Catskadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Have a great night, everyone.
Thanks for listening.